Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, co-host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is March the 14th, 2024. It has been 3,699 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 23 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 20 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Wednesday and Thursday morning. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. And there are map updates today. The Russia-Ukraine war report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, Operational Commands North, South and East of Ukraine, Open Source Intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian mill bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission, the truth, because the truth matters. Here is the daily assessment. 1. Statements made by Russian President Vladimir Putin openly threatening the use of nuclear weapons confirm our assessment from yesterday that the early stages of the mutually assured destruction and stability paradox never ended in 2023. 2. We maintain that the United States House of Representatives will not advance a bill that will provide additional financial and military aid to Ukraine, unless there is an unforeseen event that changes congressional leadership before the 2024 elections. 3. While Russia holds the initiative throughout the theater of war, the ability to sustain intense combat operations in multiple areas has degraded. 4. In our assessment, the delay in the shipment of critically needed artillery rounds from the Czech Republic-led ammunition initiative will force Ukraine to reduce the number of fire missions. 5. Ukraine continues to use a Fabian strategy to wear down Russian combat power while conserving resources. 6. In our assessment, Russia has significantly improved its intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance capabilities, that's also known as ISR, and fire control, enabling more successful attacks against mobile targets. 7. While the possibility of an intentional nuclear accident caused by Russian occupiers at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant remains low, the condition is more serious than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. 8. Russian-aligned assets have co-opted the ongoing Polish border blockade, which has become an open act of hybrid warfare against Ukraine and the Baltic states. We begin today's war report in Kharkiv and Luhansk oblasts, beginning in the Kupiansk area of operation, also known as NAO. Russian and Ukrainian sources reported fighting continued in the areas of Sinkivka, with no change to the situation. East of Kupiansk, Russian forces continued their attempts to advance toward Tabaevka without success. A Russian S-300 anti-aircraft missile used for a ground attack struck unused civilian infrastructure in the Shevchenkivsky district of Kharkiv. No casualties were reported. In the Svatovo AO of Luhansk Oblast, Russian forces restarted attacks in the area of Stelmachivka, supported by the VKS, also known as the Aerospace Forces, suffered losses and retreated to their defensive positions. In the Kremenaya AO, Russian forces intensified their offensive operations east of Terny and Yampolivka, but continued to be stopped in the no-man's land just past the Luhansk-Donetsk Oblast's administrative border. Here is what's happening in the Donbas, starting in northeast Donetsk Oblast. In the Bakhmut AO, Ukrainian source Deep State confirmed our assessment from yesterday that Russian troops were pushed out of the northern edge of Bogdanivka. Fighting continued outside of the village. Ukrainian forces have stabilized their defensive lines in Ivanivske, but they remain fragile. The General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, GSAFU, reported a Russian attack east of Chasiv Yar was repulsed. In the Khrushchevka AO, positional fighting intense at times continued north and northeast of Khrushchevka and east of Andreevka. In the Turetsk-New York AO, the Russian Ministry of Defense, Armod, claimed that there was fighting in the area of Shumy and Pivdenne. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, Russia intensified its attacks in the Avdiivka AO, but has less combat potential due to the heavy losses of armored vehicles and mobility. Northwest of Avdiivka, Armod repeated its claim that fighting was ongoing near Novobakhmutivka. No other source has reported fighting in this area, and we haven't seen any pictures or videos. West of Avdiivka, fighting continued east of Berdychi and Semenivka, in the western and center part of Orlivka, and the eastern edge of Tonenke. Geolocated video confirmed that Russian forces advanced up to 750 meters to the center of Pervomayske. The war map was updated. Fighting continued near the Ukrainian firebase at Nevelske, where the situation remains difficult. Heavy fighting continued in the Vuhledar AO, where Russia is concentrating its combat potential. Russian attempts to advance into Krasnohorivka from the east and Georgievka from the west continued. Heavy fighting also continued on the southwestern edge of Pobeda and the eastern part of Novomikhailivka, with no change in the situation. Armod continued to report fighting was ongoing southwest of Vuhledar near Shevchenko. In the Staromlinivka AO, Russian forces restarted the attempt to advance out of Novodonetske without success. GSAFU reported that a Russian attack in the area of Staromayorske failed, and Ukrainian source Deep State reported fighting was ongoing on the Donetsk-Zaporizhia Oblast administrative border in the area of Priyutne. In Zaporizhia Oblast, fighting continued in the Orikhiv AO. Russian forces continued their attacks west of Verbove and Robotene without success. Moscow categorically rejected the International Atomic Energy Agency Board of Governors' demand to withdraw from the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant and return control to Ukraine. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs declared any demand to leave ZNPP is, quote, an attempt to encroach on Russia's sovereignty and territorial integrity, unquote. Let me remind you, Russia's claim to the plant and the Zaporizhia Oblast is not recognized under international law. In the rest of Ukraine, Russia continued missile and drone attacks, while the VKS conducted airstrikes. In Dnipropetrovsk Oblast, Russia used cluster munitions to strike three Ukrainian Mi-8 and or Mi-17 helicopters that were unloading supplies near Novopavlivka, over 40 kilometers from the line of conflict. Two helicopters were destroyed and one was damaged. Ukrainian pilots Yaroslav Kava and Andriy Bakun with the 12th Army Aviation Brigade were killed in the strike. Time for assessment. Russia has continued to improve its ISR capabilities since the fall of 2023. With the video released hours after the attack, it is unlikely the Kremlin is doing an ISR dump in the information space. The wave of successful attacks on the helicopters and an M142 guided multiple launch rocket system, two likely M901 Patriot launch systems, and an NASAMS radar indicate that when a target is identified, the fire control process has been streamlined. Ukrainian commanders have to adapt quickly to this threat, as it is unlikely that the United States will replace equipment like the Patriot and M142 HIMARS. In Kryvyi Rih, the number of dead from the March the 12th missile strike climbed to 5, with 49 wounded. In the city of Sumy, two bodies were recovered from the five-story apartment building that was struck by a Shahed 136 one-way drone during the early morning of March the 13th. The number of injured climbed to 12. At the time of recording, it had been reported that Iranian-sourced Shahed 136 one-way drones struck civilian infrastructure in Sumy, Shostka, Trostianets, and Bilopilya. Iskander-M short-range ballistic missiles also hit Shostka and Trostianets. There was no information on casualties or damage. The VKS heavily bombed the Velika Pesarivka rayon, striking the region with 25 rockets and 31 Fabum PK glide bombs. Tubed and barrel artillery also hit the region almost 100 times. Incredibly, only one person was killed and two were wounded. This was almost certainly in response to the ongoing attacks by Free Russian forces in Kozinka and Glotovo, Belgorod, Russia. More about that a bit later in the podcast. Polish police were accused of illegally detaining and deporting two Ukrainian journalists with the news agency Rayon. This is the second reported incident of Ukrainian journalists being prevented from doing their work this month. On March the 7th, two reporters were filming at the Polish border crossing with the Russian enclave of Kaliningrad to document ongoing trade activity. An editor and a videographer were detained and cited for, quote, taking photos of critical infrastructure for too long. Rayon accused Polish police of searching their car without consent, seizing editorial materials, deleting pictures and videos without permission, and refusing to notify the Ukrainian consul about their detainment. At the time of recording, there had been no statement from Warsaw or Kyiv about the incident. Polish protesters restarted their blockade of the Korchowa-Krakowiec checkpoint, blocking the road used by trucks that are departing Poland to Ukraine. The pro-Russian political faction-backed farmers plan to expand the blockade to include traffic on the A4 highway. Protesters also promised to unblock the Yahodan checkpoint to allow trucks stuck on the Polish side of the border to cross into Ukraine. Protest leader Wojciech Wasz said that this was being done as a gesture of goodwill, so that Ukrainian truck drivers could return home and be with their families. Sounds more like gaslighting to me. The situation along the Russian front remains dynamic, but the fog of war is starting to lift. In the Rostov region, three Ukrainian drones struck the Novoshakhtinsk oil refinery. Russian officials claim the three drones were disabled by electronic warfare, but landed in the complex, knocking the refinery offline. Novoshakhtinsk has been attacked at least two other times, with successful strikes in June 2022 and May 2023. United States news agency Bloomberg concluded that in the last 48 hours, Russia has lost 12% of its oil processing capacity. This is in addition to the refineries knocked offline in January and February, which led to the March 1st Russian gasoline export ban. Increases in motor fuel prices in Russia were modest, and it remains unclear how severe the medium-term impact will be. Fighting between Free Russia Liberation Forces and pro-Putin government troops continued in Belgorod and Kursk. The March 13th video published by the Freedom of Russia Legion sending greetings from the liberated part of Tyotkina was actually filmed in the Ukrainian village of Rzhivka, about 300 meters from the Russian border. A spokesperson for the Legion said the video had been filmed before an assault, and at the time of publication, Free Russian forces were in the Russian settlement. During the evening, the Legion reported that combat clashes between Free Russian and pro-Putin forces continued in five settlements in the Kursk and Belgorod regions. Members of the Russian Volunteer Corps dialed back expectations, saying that the purpose of the ongoing attacks was to conduct reconnaissance in force for larger action in the future. Due to a lack of heavy equipment and air cover, it is impossible to maintain lines of communication, and within 3 to 5 days they will have to withdraw. In the Kursk region, fighting continued on the southern edge of Tyotkina. Based on the best available information, we adjusted the war map and reduced the gray area. In the Belgorod region, an attempt by Free Russian forces to cross the border northwest of Oleksandrivka in the Sumy Oblast failed, with the loss of a tank and two infantry mobility vehicles. While pro-Putin forces claim they have full control of Kozinka, no evidence has been provided. In a sign that fighting was still ongoing, local residents reported that the Ministry of Internal Affairs had deployed 5 additional units to Grivaran due to the ongoing fighting in the south. There were also reports that Russian nationals were being detained by police and the Federal Security Service of Russia, FSB, under suspicion of supporting the liberation forces. Ukrainian journalist Volodymyr Zolkin released a video southwest of Shebekina in the forests along the Russian border, showing the bodies of four Russian border guards who had been killed in an earlier firefight. Here is my theater-wide update. Someone changed the sign. It's been 0 days since a Russian government official threatened nuclear war. President Vladimir Putin gave a long and much-hyped interview where he continued his greatest hits of 2022 on repeat. When asked if Russia was ready for nuclear war, Putin said, quote, "From a military-technical point of view, we are, of course, ready. They are constantly in a state of combat readiness. Second, this is also a generally accepted thing. Our nuclear triad is more modern than any other triad, and only we and the Americans have such a triad. Quick sidebar, that's not true. China has long-range bombers, intercontinental ballistic missiles, and six Jin-class ballistic missile submarines armed with JL-2 submarine-launched ballistic missiles. France also has ICBMs, ballistic missiles, submarines, and aircraft capable of launching nuclear weapons. If you still believe Putin, I guess boot-flavored pelmeni is delicious." Back to Putin, quote, "Weapons exist to be used. We have our own principles. What do they say? We are ready to use weapons, including any weapons, including those you mentioned, if we are talking about the existence of the Russian state, about damaging our sovereignty and independence." Unquote. Oh wait, there's more. During a conference of the Institute of Peace at the United Nations, a Russian attendee threatened to use nuclear weapons when the topic of the ongoing war of aggression against Ukraine came up. Quote, "We have nuclear bombs. Don't you understand? We can destroy all your cities." Adding that Moscow will never accept the Western model of rules-based order. When asked about Putin's statement, the White House declared that there is no evidence Russia is preparing to use nuclear weapons in Ukraine, and the talk is irresponsible. Well, Putin lied about not threatening to use nuclear weapons, but he's repeatedly said he's open to peace negotiations. The spokesperson for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Russia, Maria Zakharova, said that Russia would not participate in the Swiss Peace Summit, even if they were invited. Zakharova dismissed the upcoming summit, saying it would only promote, quote, "Zelensky's ultimate formula," and would not benefit Russia. At almost the same time, President Putin was asked about peace negotiations with Ukraine and dismissed the idea. Quote, "It would be ridiculous for us to start negotiating with Ukraine just because it's running out of ammunition," with the Russian leader adding that any ceasefire would benefit Ukraine by giving them an opportunity to rearm. So, the war continues with peace negotiations, even if aid ends. There are fresh reports that Ukraine plans to mobilize between 400,000 and 500,000 soldiers in 2024 to enable 330,000 troops fighting to rotate from the front lines and reconstitute. The Ministry of Defense of Ukraine said, quote, "It must be stated right away that for security reasons we cannot disclose the exact number of people needed by the defense forces. 400,000, 500,000 is a rough estimate depending on the situation in the combat zone and cannot be achieved right away," unquote. The Verkhovna Rada is considering a draft bill that would release some convicts early so they can be mobilized into the army under contract. The full text of the draft law has not been released. However, it is reported that violent criminals, previous fighters with the so-called Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republic, and those who committed state crimes such as treason would not be eligible. The changes to Ukrainian mobilization law continue to drag through the Rada to make sure that the final version does not violate the Constitution. A third draft is not expected until mid to late April. As I had expected, the European Union granted permission to allocate $5.4 billion for the purchase of weapons for Ukraine and lifted restrictions on using those dollars only in Europe. France has provided Ukraine with another shipment of F-3 proximity fuses, which enable NATO standard 155mm artillery shells to explode over a target, creating a large spray of shrapnel. This is ideal for clearing trenches. The advisor to the Prime Minister of the Czech Republic, Tomáš Pojar, told reporters that the 300,000 artillery shells that will be purchased for Ukraine won't arrive until June. The promised funds from the coalition must be transferred, and then the contracts must be signed. That process is expected to take 2 to 3 months, with shipments beginning several weeks after. Progress of both discharge petitions to force a vote on military aid for Ukraine has slowed. Discharge Petition 9, led by Jim McGovern, now has 177 signatures, all from Democrats. It still needs another 41 to advance to the House floor. Discharge Petition 10, led by Brian Fitzpatrick, has 14 signatures, 8 from Republicans and 6 from Democrats. And that's what we know. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.